got a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
More than 80% of Americans will experience an episode of low back pain at some time in their lives. And the total costs of that condition are estimated at greater than $100 billion annually, with two-thirds of that due to decreased wages and productivity.
If you have seen a physician with a complaint of a low back pain, either acute or chronic, you may have had an MRI of the lumbar spine.
If you did have one ordered, the physician may have read you the results, or even read you the radiologist's interpretation of the MRI. If the doctor did that, then you may have been confused by the explanation given of what the doctor saw in the MRI itself. Well, Carmen and I are here to unconfuse you, hopefully.
First, we need to go through some anatomy. But don't leave now. We will try to make this fast and easy.
Its job is to provide support, strength, and flexibility to the body, as well as provide protection from any of the nerves that travel from the brain to all of the body parts and organs. The lumbar spine or low back, it's the third part of the spine. The highest portion is in the neck, the second portion continues down from the neck to the lower abdomen region of the back, and the lower back connects the thoracic spine to the sacrum, a part of the pelvis. Injury to any of these structures in the lumbar spine can lead to back pain.
The low back supports the weight of the upper body and provides mobility for everyday motions, such as bending and twisting.
The surface area of the lower lumbar vertebrae, which is the fifth vertebrae, is about 2.5 square inches.
About 60% of your body weight is supported on that small area. So in a person that weighed about 165 pounds, the fifth vertebra will support around 100 pounds or 40 pounds per square inch.
Muscles in the low back are responsible for flexing and rotating the hips while walking, as well as supporting the spinal column. Nerves in the low back supply sensation and power, the muscles in the pelvis, the legs, and the feet. Now, most acute low back pain results from injury to these muscles, the ligaments, joints, or the discs.
The body also reacts to injury by mobilizing an inflammatory healing response. While inflammation sounds minor, it can cause severe pain.
There's a significant overlap of nerve supply to many of the discs, muscles and ligaments, and the other spinal structures, and it can be difficult for the brain to accurately sense which is the cause of the pain.
Because of this overlap, a degenerated or torn lumbar disc can feel the same as a pulled muscle, since both create inflammation and painful muscle spasm in the same area.
Muscles and ligaments heal rapidly, while a torn disc may or may not, so the time course of pain helps determine the cause. It's often easy to diagnose acute pain. Break an arm and you get immediate or almost immediate pain in the area or near the injury.
Eat some bad food and you get a stomach ache. Have appendicitis? This inflammation causes pain most often in a specific area of the lower right side of the abdomen.
But chronic back pain may be more difficult to categorize, even if the initial cause is known.
There is mechanical pain, by far the most common cause of lower back pain. Mechanical pain, axial pain, is pain primarily from the muscles, ligaments, joints, facet joints, sacroiliac joints, or bones in and around the spine.
This type of pain tends to be localized at the lower back, the buttocks, sometimes the top of the legs. So what happens if a spinal nerve root becomes impinged or inflamed? This is called radicular pain and may follow a nerve root pattern, also called a dermatome, down into the buttock and the leg.
This type of pain is often described as a sharp, electric, burning type pain. It can be associated with numbness or weakness.
There are many other sources of pain, including claudication pain, myelopathic pain, neuropathic pain, pain due to deformities, tumors, infections, and pain from inflammatory conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis or ankylosing spondylitis.
Some pain can fool you. For example, pain that originates in one part of the body and presents in the lower back, such as kidney stones or ulcerative colitis.
It's also possible for low back pain to develop with no definitive cause. When this happens, then the primary focus of the physician has to be to treat the symptoms.
Now, this does not mean just treat the pain. It also means treat the limitations that occur, such as the patient's inability to bend over or lift their arms above their shoulders.
It's often more mentally debilitating than physically, such as in the athlete who enjoys his or her sport but can no longer perform due to the limitation put upon him or her by both the pain itself and the limited movement that the underlying problem causes. One of the most common problems I hear from patients when I ask them how the pain affects their lives does not come directly from the pain. For example, many say that the most depressing thing about their problem is that they can no longer play with their children or grandchildren.
Many homemakers, both men and women, are sad that they cannot do these things that they normally do, such as cook, clean, clothes, wash dishes, or take a simple walk with their friends.
Are patients with chronic pain depressed? Many times, yes. Who wakes up every morning with pain and says, "Thank God I still have the pain"? The single most common cause of lower back pain is a torn or pulled muscle or a ligament.
A low back sprain or strain can happen suddenly or can develop slowly over time from repetitive movements.
By the way, do you know the difference between sprains and strains? Even many physicians don't.
Strains occur when a muscle is stretched too far and tears, damaging the muscle itself.
Sprains happen when overstretching and tearing affects ligaments, which connect the bones themselves together.
Common causes of a sprain and strain include lifting a heavy object or twisting the spine while lifting, sudden movements that place too much stress on the low back, such as a fall, poor posture over time, and sports injuries, especially in sports that involve twisting or large forces of impact.
Chronic pain in the low back often involves a disc problem, a joint problem, or an irritated nerve root. So before we look at MRIs and learn to read them, we need to, well, just be a bit more knowledgeable about anatomy.
Generally, there are 5 lumbar vertebrae in the lower back. Normally, they do not touch each other. The lumbar discs, which are semi-subdiscs with a jelly-like center and a tough outer layer. If there is damage to the disc, the jelly-like center can leak out of the outer layer and irritate a nearby nerve root.
This jelly is full of proteins that cause inflammation when they reach a nerve root. It is this inflammation as well as nerve compression that causes nerve root pain. Not only that, the disc wall is also richly supplied by nerve fibers, and a tear through the wall can cause severe pain. At birth, the intervertebral discs are full of water and are at their healthiest.
However, as people age, the discs lose hydration and wear down. As the disc loses hydration, it cannot resist forces as well. So when a high school football player may bounce back from injuries to the lower back, the older one gets, the more likely that these same forces transferred to the disc wall may cause tears and cause pain or weakening that can lead to a herniation.
The disc can also collapse. This decreases the distance between two adjacent vertebrae. We're bipedal, meaning we walk on two legs. Naturally, gravity affects us all the time. There is always forces that press the lumbar discs closer to each other.
When the disc decreases in height, the vertebrae come closer together, forming something called stenosis. That is the nerve that passes out of the spinal cord to go to various organs in our bodies can be compressed. This is called stenosis.
It's always hard to describe an anatomic feature without visual aids. The best I think of is to allow you to imagine 2 5-pointed stars with the center being a hole.
Now take the frontmost 2 points and attach them together. This would be the vertebral body, the most massive part of the vertebrae. The 2 points facing left and right on the back of the star are the transverse processes.
Finally, the point facing to the back is called the spinous process. Often in a thin person, it is this part that you can feel when you rub your hand down someone's spine. The points on the transverse processes that come closest to each other on different vertebrae are called the articular facets.
There are two facets on top and bottom of each vertebral body and two facets on the top and bottom of the bridge between each transverse process and the spinous process, as well as on the tops and bottom of each vertebrae.
There are even facets on each of the tips of the transverse processes, so each vertebrae has a total of 10 facets. Each facet is innervated by meningeal nerves. Now, these vertebral joints have cartilage between the bones and are surrounded by a capsular ligament, which is richly innervated by nerves. These joints can be painful by themselves or in conjunction with disc pain.
The sacrum is the extension of the vertebrae that connects the vertebral column to the pelvis. It absorbs shock and tension between the upper body and the lower body.
Remember that inflammation causes swelling, pressing on the nerves, which sends pain signals to the brain. We briefly mentioned spinal stenosis, and this is a term that you'll often see in MRI reports.
This condition causes pain through narrowing of the spinal canal, where the nerve roots are located.
The narrowing can be central, meaning within the spinal canal, or foraminal, meaning within the spaces between the facets, for example. The stenosis can also be at a single level or multiple levels in the lower back.
Not only can there be compression due to disc narrowing, but there can be slippage of one vertebrae on the other. This is called spondylolisthesis.
There are five types of spondylolisthesis, but the most common are secondary to a defect or fracture of the pars. Remember that we mentioned the part of the vertebrae that links the base of the spinous process with the transversus processes? That is between the facet joints or mechanical instability of the facet joints. Here the pain can be caused by instability in the back or compression of the nerves, causing pain to run down the legs.
The bones of the spine are not immune to the effects of arthritis. So often osteoarthritis results from wear and tear of the disc and facet joints. It also causes pain, inflammation, instability, and stenosis to a variable degree, and can occur at a single level or multiple levels of the lower spine.
Spinal osteoarthritis can also be called spondylosis or degenerative joint disease. Many of us remember when as school children we were tested for curvature of the spine or scoliosis. Actually, there are two types, kyphosis and scoliosis.
One is abnormal curvature forwards and backwards, while the other is a curvature from side to side.
Carmen said abnormal curvature forwards and backwards because there is a natural S-curve to the spine. It is not straight like a ruler.
These deformities may be associated with lower back pain if they lead to breakdown of the discs, facet joints, sacroiliac joints, or even stenosis.
A fracture that occurs in the cylindrical vertebrae in which the bone essentially caves in on itself can cause sudden pain. This type of fracture is most common due to weak bones, such as from osteoporosis, and it, of course, is more common in older people.
One of the biggest problems in reading MRIs is formulating a diagnosis for a patient that comes in with pain. For example, osteoarthritis or degenerative disc disease could appear on an imaging study, but the person may not report pain, or the pain may not even be caused by what is noted on the MRI.
There are other causes of low back pain that we may have not mentioned, such as infections. Osteomyelitis is a spinal infection that can cause severe pain. If it's left untreated, it could be life-threatening. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411.
Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I'm here with my co-host Carmen Lasky. And Carmen and I have been talking about some spinal problems en route to telling you about how to read MRIs. We ended the first half of the show talking about some of the causes of back pain.
There are also tumors. However, most tumors in the spine starts in another part of the body and metastasize to the spine. The most common tumors that spread to the spine starts from cancer in the breast, prostate, kidney, thyroid, or lung.
So any new symptoms of back pain in a patient with a known diagnosis of cancer should be evaluated for possible spinal metastases.
Back pain is a possible symptom associated with autoimmune conditions such as ankylosing spondylitis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Crohn's disease, fibromyalgia, and others.
There are many other problems associated with the low back and spinal nerve, so we'll leave those to a future program. However, our main theme for today's show is the MRI, or magnetic resonance imaging scan. Remember that an MRI does not use radiation as would be needed for an X-ray. It does provide a detailed image of spinal structures.
An MRI can detect abnormalities with soft tissues such as muscles, ligaments, intervertebral discs. An MRI might also be used to locate misalignments or joint overgrowth in the spine.
As we get older, we all develop changes in our spines. Studies have shown that about one-third of completely pain-free people undergo a lumbar MRI that have abnormalities noted. And after the age of 60, well, about 90% of people have at least a degenerated disc. While we try to limit ordering MRIs for everyone with low back pain or leg pain until the symptoms are persistent for weeks to months, conservative options such as physical therapy have failed or weakness numbness develops, many people have MRIs.
When attempting to read an MRI, it is important to remember that the report is made by a radiologist who legally must report everything observed.
The radiologist makes this report often without any consideration of the patient's symptoms. Therefore, the MRI report may mention many different findings or abnormalities, making patients feel like everything's wrong with their spine.
However, as we said before, all, none, or some of these MRI findings may explain your symptoms.
The lumbar spine consists of bones, usually five vertebral bones, stacked on top of each other and separated by five discs.
The vertebral bodies are usually labeled 1 through 5, and the discs are named by the bones above and below. So the disc between lumbar vertebra 3 and 4 is called disc L3-L4, or just L3-4.
The lowest lumbar vertebra is the fifth, and it lies above the sacrum. So the disc here is called L5-S1. Just behind the column of bones and discs is the sac which holds the nerves and fluid, called cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF for short.
The spinal cord itself ends around the T12-L1 level, but the nerves continue down the lumbar spine as a cauda equina.
At each disc level, a nerve exits the spine and goes to a specific region of both legs.
For example, the L1 and L2 nerves tend to go to the groin region, the L3 nerve to the front of the thigh, the L4 nerve to the shin and instep, the L5 nerve to the top of the foot and big toe.
And finally, the S1 nerve to the outside and bottom of the foot. Although you cannot often differentiate the parts of the disc normally is composed of two parts. The central softer part of the disc, that's the nucleus, and the outer layer, which is called the annulus. Annulus comes from the Latin term meaning ring. Normally, the annulus holds the nucleus in the center, and there's no contact with the nerve roots.
Over time, the discs tend to lose their water content. This is called desiccation. The annulus of the disc may bulge, protrude, or extrude. These are terms often seen on MRI reports.
The bones may develop bone spurs called osteophytes. You'll see the term ligamentum flavum in many MRI reports. These are the ligaments that connect one vertebrae to the next.
The posterior part of a vertebra forms a vertebral arch in 11 parts, consisting of the two pedicles, two laminae, and seven processes.
The laminae give attachment to the ligamentum flavum. These ligaments may enlarge, which is, as we know, called hypertrophy.
The bones may slip on one another, and this is called spondylolisthesis, which we mentioned before.
The result of these changes may narrow the places where the nerve exits the spine. This is called foraminal stenosis. These changes may narrow the canal where the nerves reside in the spine, also called central stenosis.
But even with all these abnormalities mentioned in the MRI, it does not mean that your pain is due to any of them. These are simple observations that the radiologist must put in his report.
On the other hand, these problems may start pressing on nerves, causing pain, weakness, or even numbness. So now we'll have a quick review before the show comes to an end.
Lumbar spondylosis is a very broad term that can be used to describe any arthritis in the spine.
Disc desiccation is also called loss of disc height and describes natural aging of the discs. As we get older, the disc naturally loses the water and essentially shrinks. This can lead to narrowing of the disc space or bone-on-bone changes. However, this occurs in every person, and this is not necessarily a cause of any symptoms.
Many reports contain the terms disc bulge, disc protrusion, and disc extrusion. These terms are a variation of the same concept.
Typically, a bulge just means the annulus is weaker and deviates towards the nerve sac. Bulges, herniations are extremely common and rarely cause any pain or symptoms. Many people have them at multiple levels in their spine.
Protrusion is a slight progression in which the disc now may press into a nerve. An extrusion or sequestration commonly causes symptoms in which a piece of the nucleus now has exited the disc and is pressing on a nerve. This often requires intervention.
Osteophytes are bone spurs. They're commonly associated with other findings such as disc bulges.
The bony edges that attach to the disc can enlarge as the discs bulge and may or may not compress the nerves. Just as with the disc's bulges, these are very common and not typically a cause of symptoms in the lumbar spine.
The ligamentum flavum is a tissue just behind the nerve sac, and as we age, this ligament also can get bigger or hypertrophy. Depending on how much it enlarges, it could press on the nerves and potentially cause symptoms.
The facets are the joints in the back that help the spine move. The spine is essentially a three-legged table. The vertebral body is the largest leg in the front. The two facets are the two back legs.
As we age, the facets can become larger and may or may not press on the nerves. This may again or may not cause pain in the legs or back.
Spondylolisthesis refers to bones slipping over one another. Everywhere in the spine, the bones should be aligned.
Finally, we have stenosis, which really refers to a situation which a space is made smaller. The central canal where the nerves reside within the spine can become smaller, and that causes central stenosis. The foramen where the nerves exit the spine can become smaller, causing foraminal stenosis. Anything from a disc bulge to an osteophyte to ligamentum hypertrophy, even to facet hypertrophy and spondylolisthesis, can cause central or foraminal stenosis.
It is important that you, as a patient, understands these terms so that you can understand just what your doctor is saying when he reads the results to you.
So, now you know. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.